From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, one physicist's quest to travel in time. An absolutely incredible story. Well, hope is dimming as the days go by in Utah. Crews hoping to get food and air to six coal miners drilled to now within 1,000 feet of where they believe the trapped men might be, and hope to reach them in about a day or two, but will it be in time? It still wasn't known whether the miners were alive more than 2 days after the initial cave-in. Teams were drilling a second, larger hole as well that could be used to get food down to the miners 1,500 feet below ground. In Minneapolis, authorities investigating the collapse of the Interstate 35 West Bridge are looking for a person who was in a kayak below or near the bridge when it tumbled into the Mississippi River last week. That's about all we know right now. They simply say, we would like to talk to that person. Investigators there, though, have found what may be a design flaw in the bridge in the steel parts that connect girders, raising safety concerns for other bridges around the country. The Federal Highway Administration swiftly responded by urging all states to take extra care with how much weight they place on bridges when sending construction crews to work on bridges. Crews were doing work on the deck of the Interstate 35 West Bridge when it simply gave way, sending rush hour traffic into the Mississippi River, killing at least five people. In New York, what was thought to be a violently windy thunderstorm that plowed through Brooklyn turned out to be a weather event of historical proportions. The National Weather Service has now confirmed that an F1 tornado touched down in the Livingston Randall Manor area of Staten Island before eventually becoming the F2 that slammed into Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. The storm marked Brooklyn's first tornado since weather events were recorded. A huge earthquake under the Java Sea shook Indonesia's capital early Thursday, violently shaking tall buildings and panicking residents. The U.S. Geological Survey said the quake had a magnitude of 7.5, centered about 66 miles east of Jakarta. President Bush was successfully treated for Lyme disease nearly a year ago. The condition had never been revealed until the White House today made public the results of his annual physical exam. They said that he was treated for what they called early localized Lyme disease last August after developing the characteristic rash, and that it did not recur. Lyme disease is a common tick-borne infection that, if left untreated, can cause arthritis and other problems. The president's main form of exercise and recreational activity is mountain biking, which could bring him in contact with ticks. The Space Shuttle Endeavour and its astronaut crew roared into space this evening, ending a 22-year wait for teacher-turned-space flyer Barbara Morgan. Richard C. Hoagland monitoring those events. EnterpriseMission.com, he's on with us for an update. It was looked like a clean launch, Richard.
You know, George, I can never see one of these on TV and not recall what it's like to actually be there. And I've been very privileged to see some pretty amazing launches, from the Saturn V's to a lot of shuttle launches. And I must say that this one, it was really a kind of a bittersweet moment, because it was a perfect launch. But as you got near that moment, you know, when they say throttle up,
I know,
having Barbara Morgan on board, I kept looking and I kept thinking where I was, what I was seeing in that tragedy of 1986, 21 years ago. What was so peculiar, though, is that after the successful launch and insertion into orbit, when they had the post-launch press conference, some reporters, particularly one, she looked like she was Islamic because she was wearing the burqa.
Yeah.
She asked them the question, what were they thinking in terms of Barbara Morgan and Krista McAuliffe at that moment? And Mike Griffin refused to answer the question, and the shuttle mission manager said he wasn't thinking about that at all. And frankly, I find that a little unbelievable, because who knows anything about the history of NASA?
Who wasn't thinking about
this? Who wasn't thinking? I mean, it's like, where were you when John Kennedy was killed? Other than that, the mission is going flawlessly. They've had a few small little glitches, but you're always, you know, on spec when you have a brand new vehicle. This spacecraft, you know, has not flown for 5 years. This Orbiter 105 Endeavour went back for a complete refurbishment. So it's in essence a brand new shuttle, and there are a few bugs and kinks to be worked out, but it's going wonderfully well. They'll get to the space station for rendezvous and docking on Friday, and then we're going to see some interesting downlinks with the classroom in space from Barbara Morgan, who must be having her own thoughts tonight, 21 years after the events that happened way back then.
So true. Thank you, Richard, for your update. It's Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. And, of course, Barbara Morgan, who's up there in space right now, was the backup to Krista McAuliffe prior to that very tragic 1986 Challenger mission. And all is going well there. Theory suggests that miniature black holes might have formed in the early universe, but astronomers do not have any evidence of their existence. The miniature black holes have event horizons as small as the width of an atomic particle and might have been created during the Big Bang, the moment the universe was apparently created. These miniature black holes contain as much matter, they say, as Mount Everest. In a moment, we'll be talking with Walter Wagner about his theories about black holes, the many black holes, and also colliders. What could happen to us? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Walter Wagner graduated University of California, Berkeley, with a minor in physics, major in biology. Later, he discovered a novel particle in a balloon-borne cosmic ray detector, initially identified as a magnetic monopole. Though its identity remains uncertain, it is definitely not within the standard repertoire of known particles. We're going to talk with him about some of the things going on the planet and in space. Hey, Walter, welcome to the program.
Hey, George, thanks. Glad to be here.
My pleasure. You're doing some great work. Tell us a little bit. The story I had, though, right before we brought you on, of course, these miniature black holes. Exactly what might they be?
Well, it's interesting theory. Nobody has ever seen one of these, of course, and it's not known whether they ever can exist. But back in the 1970s, when black holes were first theorized, they were believed to be created by large stars that would collapse under their own weight after they burned out their nuclear fires and form a small hole in space with what's called a Schwarzschild radius being the effective diameter of the black hole. And as most people realize, nothing can escape from them, not even light. Light that would be attempted to be emitted would basically be redshifted to infinity, so the photons never escape. So you can't see them. There's just a hole in space. Later, Stephen Hawking and others theorized that smaller black holes could have existed as well if they had been created in the early stages of the universe. And there was, in essence, no theoretical limit to how small these could be. And Stephen Hawking came up with the idea that they could, really small ones could even eventually start evaporating. One of the reasons for coming up with this idea was we didn't see any. How come there aren't any around?
Mm-hmm.
And so he came up with an idea that they could evaporate by a process called quantum tunneling, where a virtual particle would be created on the interior of the Schwarzschild radius, and a real particle would be created on the exterior and then move away. And as a consequence, the small black hole would slowly disintegrate. I say slowly. If it was large enough, it would be slow. When it gets down to a very small size, that process starts speeding up, and eventually it will just disintegrate in a burst or a shower of particles.
Now, you're concerned about the possibility that these miniature black holes can be formed by super colliders. Tell me about that and why.
Well, when the first super collider was proposed, that was the one called the superconducting super collider that was under construction in Waxahachie, Texas. People started thinking about what might happen, and I was one of the persons thinking about it.
Right.
And the idea occurred to me that what was in essence occurring when these photons or other particles, nuclei of atoms, are colliding at very high energies and then releasing a shower of particles in the collision, that in essence was pretty much the same thing that a black hole was doing when it would be going through its final throes of existence. And so I thought, well, gee, maybe it's possible that we could create a miniature black hole. And I did the calculations using the mass of what we were creating, and came up with a lifetime using Hawking's formula. They last for about 10 to the minus 27 seconds, incredibly short. And so I thought, well, gee, that's safe enough. They'll just create a shower of particles and be gone. But, you know, I had only my calculations and I didn't have any proof. And so I started discussing the idea around, and the Scientific American ran a letter I wrote to them about that. And it's still the general consensus, and I use the word consensus because nobody knows. The general consensus is, yes, they would be very short-lived and therefore not a problem. But nobody has that proof yet, and there are actually some people who believe that Hawking radiation, as it's called, doesn't exist. It may not actually occur that way. So we may actually be able to create these particles, and then they won't disappear the way Hawking believes they will, that they might actually last for a period of
time. And that could be the problem.
I can't prove that they can't, and that's my problem.
Well, you know, as you know, CERN, which is this incredible particle accelerator right there near the France-Swiss border near Geneva, this thing's going to go online pretty soon, Walter. It's been delayed because they've had some problems. That's not always a great thing to hear, by the way. So they create this huge particle accelerator. What happens if they do create these black holes? I mean, what's the worst possibility here?
Well, you know, of course, the worst possibility is if they last for longer than the 10 to the minus 27 seconds. If they, it takes 10 to the minus 10 seconds to travel from their point of creation to the edge of the containment, which is basically the vacuum chamber in which they're created, the tunnel that the photons or lead nuclei would be traveling through. And so if they last longer than that, they would have the opportunity to interact with other matter. And if they interact with other matter, they would grow larger. And if they grow larger, their lifetime would last longer, and they would allow it to grow larger still. And as it accreted matter into itself, eventually, under gravity, it would fall to the center of the Earth and continue to accrete matter.
Are you saying it could literally suck up the planet from within?
Yes, conceivably it could. It would basically turn the Earth into a small black hole.
Oh, my God. I hope they're thinking about these possibilities, Walter.
Well, they have been thinking about them, and that's what's scary for me about this, is they've tried to figure out arguments to prove that this won't occur, and that's what I want to do, is I want to come up with an argument to prove that this won't occur. And they've come up with some arguments, and I've examined their arguments, and I found flaws in them.
And well, what are they saying, Walter, that there will not be any miniature black holes, or that these black holes will simply go away in a very quick instant?
They're saying that they will simply go away via Hawking radiation.
Ah, but they admit that they could create the black hole.
Several people have suggested it's going to become a, quote, black hole factory.
Oh, my. You know, when I was talking about CERN 2.5-3 years ago, I threw out the possibility, without having any true scientific background in this, that, you know, what would happen if these particle accelerators created these black holes to the point where, you know, they did hang around. Now, I didn't know the ramifications. You've explained it. This has got to be one of the most frightening things I've ever heard.
Well, it certainly was very perturbing to me, and it's perturbing that there's a relatively cavalier attitude about it. You're familiar, of course, with the Minneapolis bridge collapse, freeway.
Absolutely. All too well.
And, you know, we sent inspectors there year after year taking a look at this, and they all got lulled into the idea that, okay, the design's maybe not the perfect one, but we don't see any problem. There is no danger of imminent collapse. And that was the report kept on coming back.
Yes.
And obviously, it's acceptable to do that under the circumstances because what's the worst consequence? What happened?
And they were wrong. Now we know that whatever happened, they were wrong.
They were wrong. That's right. But under this circumstance, the worst possible scenario, and it's the only bad scenario in creating particles, all the bad scenarios are that the planet is destroyed. And there is no going back and taking a look at it afterwards and say, oh, yeah, we made a mistake. We have to have it absolutely perfect without a single, you know, we have to have an absolute proof and not this, well, I think it's beyond a reasonable possibility kind of an explanation. And that's what we've gotten so far on the the arguments that have been presented as to why it won't happen.
Walter, paint us a picture for a moment. Let's assume the particle collider is turned on at CERN. All of a sudden, they've created miniature black holes, many miniature black holes, and these black holes stick around far longer than they anticipated. Assuming you're correct, and we could start collapsing within this thing, explain what we would be looking at as this occurs.
What would occur is that a particle of that nature would fall to the center of the Earth, and undetected, essentially. And it would, in the process, pick up some matter. It would be very slow.
I mean, would it go straight down to the core? Where would it hang?
Straight down to the core. There would be nothing to stop it. There would be no opposing force, if you will, because anything it ran into would become part of it.
All right.
And it would sort of fall to the center, sort of start slowly oscillating and growing larger. And in the process, it would stabilize towards the center of the planet. And eventually, and I haven't done the calculations myself, but I've seen other people who've done the calculations. Within a few hours or a half hour or thereabouts, on the surface, we'd start getting earthquakes, and everybody would basically, the whole planet would succumb, you know, shake.
All over the planet?
All over the planet.
All right.
Before it then collapsed into the black hole. So basically, everyone would die first in an earthquake. Unless you happen to be in a plane or jet airplane or something like that.
That is amazing. And the planet would basically just implode within itself and get sucked into this thing.
Yeah.
And then you would see nothing, I guess, right?
If you were in a space shuttle orbiting the Earth.
Far above, yeah.
And you want to say, but you'd still be in orbit.
It'd be gone.
You'd still be in orbit.
Okay, and there, I assume, would be a massive black hole then, and the shuttle would get sucked in as well eventually, right?
No, the shuttle would be not, because it would not have physical contact with it, the shuttle would still continue orbiting what had been the planet Earth, but it would be in orbit, by that time, about 7,000 miles away from the Schwarzschild radius.
Walter, this makes the Y2 scare child's play.
Yeah, it does.
Are there any scientists beyond you who are thinking about this the way you are?
Quite a few, actually. I've been in communication with several physicists, Rainer Plauger from Germany and James Blagetti. James is not a physicist, he's a computer programmer. But and a few others who have examined this, and Dr. Plaga's background is in background in cosmic radiation physics, and he's actually had some ideas that he thinks it can be safe, but he can't prove them, and he has the same concern. If you can't prove it's safe, then the adverse risk, even if no matter how small you might think it is. If it's there, you don't want to do this until you can eliminate that risk completely.
Well, what can
we haven't been able to do yet?
What can we do as Americans? Is there anything we can do? Can we protest, or is this too late? Because this thing's going to go online pretty soon.
Well, it's right now. The date is May of 2008. The last date I saw. I am planning on initiating a lawsuit here in the U.S. I may. Depending upon the kind of funding I obtain, be able to initiate a lawsuit in Europe as well. But I'm not certain how effective that is. I think it's more of a grassroots opposition requiring that this be more thoroughly analyzed, which it hasn't been done, will work better. I know that in Europe there's far more interest in this, or has been up until late. There's been a lot more news media attention to this.
Well, even if you're wrong, the stakes are so big, we should check this and make absolutely sure. The analogy you just used about the 35 West Bridge in Minneapolis is perfect. I mean, for years, the inspectors said, hey, you know, that's got some flaws to it, but we think it's going to be okay. At no point did anybody ever say, this thing has an imminent collapse coming up here.
Right.
They never said that, and it sounds almost like the same thing with this.
Yeah, they've looked at it, and they've come up with some very good arguments generally as to why it should be safe. But in looking at those arguments, we found myself, Dr. Plog, and a few others that have found some very serious flaws with those arguments, that under some scenarios, they are not valid arguments. And that's what we are concerned about. One of the arguments is that cosmic rays coming in are far more energetic than what's occurring would be occurring at the CERN, the LHC. And that has two and actually three major flaws to it. One, what we are doing at the collider is we're creating a particle that would be essentially stationary relative to Earth, because you have two opposite energy beams colliding together, and the resultant energy is very close to zero.
Well, hey, Walter, hang with us. I want you to take phone calls. Can you do that for us?
Sure.
All right, stay with us. We're going to keep Walter Wagner for the rest of this hour. What an incredible story. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, I've got some great news for those of you who are renewing your After Dark subscription. You too will get the free CD, the classic Art Bell interview with Al Bielek, Philadelphia experiment fame. That's yours too. So those of you who are new subscribers to After Dark, and those of you coming up for renewal, you'll get the CD. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online, coasttocoastam.com. And every sale, and I now assume every renewal, will go to a piece of Mr. Al Bielek. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Walter Wagner. We're talking about these particle colliders and mini black holes as well. Initially, you sent a letter to Scientific American about the formation of the black holes, but you did say you believed it was not likely. Sounds like you've changed.
Well, no, actually, it's my calculations showed that it should be safe, that these things should evaporate. But I wasn't certain. Since then, I've also discovered that there are other kinds of particles that can be created that are equally dangerous. One of those is called a strangelet. And the arguments as to why, the cosmic ray argument, as it's called, as to why it should be safe, has been shown not to be valid in some circumstances. And so the concern still exists that this could very well create something that would destroy the planet. The miniature black hole is one scenario. A strangelet is another scenario. There are some others also, that other scenarios that have been thrown out there that can't be disproven as of yet. The theorists I've spoken with all tend to think, well, this isn't the way that physics will work, but they can't prove it. The only way you could prove things of that nature is by obtaining additional data, additional information. And, you know, if you do that right here and you're wrong, well, it's too late. You can't do anything about it. And so the concern I had then is still the exact same concern I have now. I believe that it's possible that they won't be created, but I can't prove that.
All right. Let's...
The possibility that they will be created is equally likely.
To the phones we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, boy, am I glad to talk to you.
Sure thing.
Okay, this man represents what I call the Chicken Little School of Physics.
Okay.
Which is the sky is falling and the earth is coming to an end. And what he's doing with you is he's scaremongering, because I've worked on the tracking construction on the collider in Waxahachie. I worked with Weinstein and Edward Teller.
Uh-huh.
And Edward Teller, I love this man, because he said when they exploded the first thermonuclear bomb, the calculations went from it won't go off to it'll blow up the world. And Teller got it right. His calculations were right on the money. And the idea is, if they can scare the United States, which I was involved in the politics as much as the science, if they can scare the United States into being afraid of testing any of these things, then Europe gets to be number one, and they put Americans to the end of the line. And I saw this happen with Waxahachie. They tried to tell us fire ants would eat up the colliders, so we shouldn't build it there. They said there was no scientist in Texas, which that really insulted us. And by the time we had it mostly built and they canceled it, immediately the American scientists went to the back of the line at CERN, whereas before they were treating us well because they thought we'd have the biggest collider in the universe. So if you go for this, they might as well take away all our technology, because we're too scared to play with it.
All right, let's get Walter's take on it. Walter, you want to react to that?
Well, you know, I'm very much in favor of all kinds of technology, and I think we need to be doing a lot more research in a lot of areas. I'm very much in favor of our space program. I think that should be expanded tremendously. I'm very much in favor of all of our telescope programs. I live here on the Big Island. We have several large telescopes here on the Big Island, and I think we need to be doing a lot more in those areas. the argument that, well, gee, the H-bomb didn't set the atmosphere off. They did a calculation, and they came up with a probability that it would occur. The probability was very low, and they did the test, and the atmosphere didn't go, you know, kaplooey. That argument is simply nonsensical for saying, therefore, we can go ahead and do any kind of testing we want, because we're always right. We know that that isn't the case. Sometimes there are mistakes made, sometimes there are not, and I suspect that you know, perhaps in a more enlightened age, if we'd been gone about testing H-bombs with that kind of perceived risk, maybe it wasn't the best test that should have been done, even if the risk wasn't materialized. What I'm saying is that what we need to do is we need to get more information, more data to prove that this can be done and tested safely. With a risk where the entire planet is destroyed, it's just not the same as, you know, if a bridge collapses and kills 20 or 30 people. That's an entirely different magnitude of risk.
All right, Wildcard Line, your turn. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Two quick questions. I was listening to a professor from the University of Hawaii about 10 years ago, and he was saying that we could actually rip a hole in this plane of existence to another plane. He was explaining the plane of existence beside us is an energy plane, and he said if that were to happen, that we would literally wipe out light years of this plane. And for the second question, what happened to the collider in Chicago? Did they finish building that one, and how did it work out? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Okay. I presume you're referring to Paul Dixon. He's the only professor I know at the University of Hawaii who has been talking about changing space-time fabric. He's what's called the De Sitter space transition. There are some theorists who have predicted that there is another a ground state of the vacuum that our current universe is not in, and that dropping to the ground state, it releases a tremendous amount of energy, but there is an energy barrier to get to that state. And so far, nothing that we have done, and not even in the interior of exploding stars, can you normally get to that or cross that energy barrier. But he's under the impression that possibly a collider of the nature of CERN could do that. So that is one of the theories, and I haven't been able to disprove it. He's got some convoluted arguments to reach to that conclusion. I didn't want to get into that, but that is one of the theories of what can conceivably go wrong.
Is there, Walter, a European-U.S. Competition going on here?
Well, a few years ago, I read that a lot of the scientists at Fermilab were leaving Fermilab and heading over to CERN. So I think those are American scientists over there, a lot of them. The CERN is actually a consortium of lots of scientists from all over the globe. It's also been funded in large part by the Department of Energy. The superconducting magnets at the CERN Large Hadron Collider facility were manufactured by the people at Fermilab. They're the same technology that they used for the Tevatron at Fermilab. And the collider there has been finished. It's been working. They collide protons and antiprotons. But it's essentially the same thing. It's a lower energy collider than what will be done at the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland and France, both.
You were a physics major, and then you switched in college. You graduated eventually as a biologist. Now you're doing more physics. What's going on here with you?
Well, I was a physics major through my junior year, and my senior year I ran out of money. And I saw that I could graduate quicker. I graduated a shorter, one quarter shy. If I switched majors, I'd had the number of biology classes as undergraduate courses. So I switched majors and got my degree in biology so that I could afford to graduate. I was sort of one of the poor students in those days. And then went back and did graduate work in cosmic radiation physics at UC Berkeley.
Okay, next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. Your turn. Hi there.
George, can't wait to see you down here in Austin at TalkFest.
Coming in January, absolutely.
Right. Well, I have a question for your guest, man. All I caught of this was that you said something was going to be launched in May of 2008?
Yes, that's when they're planning on having first collisions.
Really? Well, I have an alternate theory for you. Well, a lot of people nowadays are talking a lot about 2012. Well, with 2008, I know there's some new legislation coming up that people say has such extreme measures that kind of correlate with Revelations that talks about, you know, the no buying, selling. I wonder if this black hole could be the hole opening up for the Antichrist.
You never know. I don't know if you get involved in that, Walter, but it's an interesting thought.
Well, no, I don't. I try to avoid having any kind of religious discussion because it opens the door to all kinds of arguments from every religious faith. And so I usually try to stick entirely to physics arguments. But yes, I've heard of that, and I've heard of a number of other things that this relates to, and I just can't comment on it.
Are you staying on top of the Mayan 2012 calendar, the end date December 21st, 2012?
I've heard of that. I'm not staying on top of it.
Okay. Yeah, just keep listening to the program. We have programs on that as we get close to that incredible date. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, my name's Rick.
All right, Ricky, it's all yours.
Okay, well, my question was, I was reading about that collider in Switzerland, the CERN collider, and the article I read said it was going to be fired up first time at the end of the year, but apparently that's been postponed.
They've got some delays, yeah.
Yeah, they had a death a couple of years ago, dropped a load on a technician, and then they had another accident.
Okay, here's my question. My question is this. The article I read talked about the Higgs boson particle that they're theorizing exists, that is the thing that makes up the entire universe and actually interacts with everything to create matter rather than antimatter or something like that to that effect. So who's the one that actually came up with the theory of the Higgs boson particle, if that's what it is? And then the other part of the question was this. The article mentioned the collider that was being built by the U.S. and Texas, but according to the article, our project in Texas had been abandoned. So I want to know, is it still abandoned, or did they pick up, and are they going to continue building that collider in Texas? And I'll listen off the air. I like your program.
The collider in Texas
was
under construction 20 years ago. It was a project by Fermilab, U.S. funded through Fermilab is one of the national laboratories.
Yes.
And it was under construction. I think they got the tunnel bored about a third of the way around the circumference when Congress pulled the funding on it. And so it was abandoned. It still sits abandoned at that stage. The next collider to come online then after that was the RIC, the Relativistic Heavy Iron Collider at Brookhaven, one of the other national laboratories there on Long Island. I've visited over there. And now this most recent one, the LHC, is the third collider to be coming online. The electron positron collider at CERN was also a collider, but it was of electrons and positrons rather than hadrons.
All right, we'll take a few more calls and then we're done here, Walter. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Hi, this is Billy from Pittsburgh.
Hi, Billy.
Can the soul escape a black hole? What's going to happen if all the ancestors of our that are waiting on the other side, 6 billion people who all just wink out in a matter of seconds?
You know, it all depends, and I know you're not going to get involved in a spiritual question, Walter, but it all depends on whether whatever black holes suck in, and then what might be on the other side, if we can assume there's another side, if it's a dimension, another dimension, or if it's some kind of a physical situation, we don't know, do we?
No, we don't. I mean, everyone has their own speculations. I don't want to go into my speculations on what's on, quote, the other side. I do know that if everybody dies, it's not a good thing. Certainly you won't be able to do any work for your ancestors. They'd be very pissed at you for having done that, to put it in sort of a very crude, blunt term. I think one of the problems with physics is it gets divorced too much from spiritual aspects. One of the points I wanted to point out is that something physics can't really explain is there are 300,000 human souls arriving on our planet every day. That's how many babies are born, roughly, every day.
300,000.
300,000.
I bet there's more babies than that born every day.
Well, it might be more. It might be closer to 500,000. That would be in that neighborhood.
How many kids are born a day on this planet?
Yeah, it's about 500,000.
500,000. All right, that may be a good number.
Yeah. 500,000 kids born every day. and, you know, a large number of people dying every day, too. And so he wants to bring up a point of that, you know, a number of religious beliefs are that there are people who are ancestors who are waiting for us to do things for them and so forth. Yeah, that would put an abrupt halt to everything.
All right, this was about 300,000 births a day. That's what they're estimating. Okay, pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Mike in Davis, California.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, I have a general physics question for Dr. Wagner about black holes. So if everything falls into a black hole and light can't escape it, things can't escape it except by Hawking radiation, which is theorized right now, how does a black hole gravitate? And I'll listen off the
Okay, and it's not Dr. Wagner, correct?
It is. What do you mean, how does it gravitate?
Well, he's hung up now, so...
Okay.
I guess I can't elaborate on his question.
I'm not exactly certain what he means by gravitate.
How about move, migrate?
Yeah.
These holes, can anything, can they...
They are influenced by gravity. Basically, the properties that they would have would be a property of mass and a property of electric charge. They would still have the same mass. If the Earth were converted into a black hole, it would still have its same mass. It would still be orbiting about the sun. The moon would still be orbiting about that black hole that used to be the Earth. So it still had that property. In terms of it evaporating, something of the mass of the Earth, a black hole that was the mass of the Earth would take, you know, trillions and trillions of years to evaporate. So, but I don't think that's the question he's asking either.
Well, I've got to tell you, it's a story well worth checking into. Your possible lawsuit is also a fascinating story as well. What are the odds? What do you think of filing a suit like that?
I'm the eternal optimist, of course, and I think that we're going to be successful. We have a website that we've developed. It's called lhcdefense.org, and anybody who wants to contribute, we're asking people to kick in $10. You know, if we have 10,000 people each kick in $10, that'll fund a lawsuit.
And you've got some law background, don't you?
Yeah, I actually obtained a doctorate in law way back in 1978, and I had rubbed elbows for a couple of years with attorneys and such, and it wasn't what I wanted to be doing. I went back into working physics.
All right, time for one more quick call. Very quick. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Me?
Yeah, it is. If you are who you think you are.
This is Char. I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida. However, I've been working out here for a year, and I live in Burr Ridge, Illinois, and I tuned in just a hair late. I live next to Argonne National Laboratory, and they have the photon source there.
Sure.
Is this the same thing that this collider is?
No.
No, this one's different. Very briefly explain CERN one more time, Walter, before we're done.
Sure. The CERN Collider, it's called the Large Hadron Collider, abbreviated LHC, and it is designed to collide the nuclei of atoms together at very high speed. They will be traveling at about 99.9999% the speed of light in opposite directions, head-on collisions, and it will release a tremendous amount of energy. Unless it collapses together into forming a little miniature black hole.
You know, Walter, you could be wrong, but I'd rather we err on the side of caution and check this out before they flip the switch.
I agree.
And we'll see what happens. In other websites we've got linked up, do you have one major one you'd like people to have?
That was the one,
defense.org.
Other websites I've given you are some of the professional societies I'm a member of.
Okay. Okay.
Medicine, Health Physics Society.
Well, keep in touch with us, Walter.
Okay.
Definitely before they go online down there in May of next year.
I'll send you emails of our progress.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. It's Walter Wagner. And, of course, if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Now, just in a moment here on Coast to Coast, we're going time traveling with a physicist. He's been on the program before, but I'm going to tell you a fascinating story when we come back as to why he's on tonight. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.